You are listening to Nerding Out with Laura on CICK 93.9 FM, Smithers Community Radio. We are broadcasting from unceded Cassia territory of the Gitumdun clan, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. Well, it is Friday, May 10th, and I am Laura of Nerding Out with Laura. I'm in the studio, woohoo, after a couple weeks of enjoying the nice warm weather. I've been finding it quite difficult to do anything that's not outside. And so, yeah, putting on the show has been a bit of a challenge. I haven't really wanted to sit inside and research topics on a computer, and also trying to coordinate guests to come on and such. And I thought, do I drop the show? I really don't want to drop the show. So I'm just coming in here, and I have brought something from my ancient past. It is a university textbook. I have kept only one textbook from my college and university years, many years ago now, over a decade. And yeah, actually keeping your textbooks is not a good idea. For anyone that has done post-secondary schooling, you will know that textbooks are really, really expensive. And every instructor often will ask for several textbooks for their course, which only lasts, you know, like 4 months. And so what the idea is that you're supposed to try and buy secondhand because they cost hundreds of dollars, and then sell your textbooks immediately once you are done your class. Or some people would go to the library to study and just take the textbook out rather than buying it. I was always a sucker. I would buy all the textbooks, even the like recommended reading. I do like to read, but I was also just anxious that I didn't want to miss anything. And what if I couldn't get it secondhand? And what if I really needed that extra reading? Or what if it wasn't in the library? So I would buy all the textbooks, and then I would very regretfully sell them because I love books and I would happily keep them on a shelf forever. And so I did that with only one of these textbooks. This is the Molecular Biology of the Cell, and this is the fourth edition. When did this come out? It's got several authors: Bruce Alberts, Alexander Johnson, Julian Lewis, Martin Raff, Keith Roberts, and Peter Walter. And let's see here. This was printed, looking at the publication. I don't see a date. Interesting. Oh, well, I guess it's not that important. It's a bit of an older one. I'm sure there's many editions that have come out since. And so I decided I would, you know, kind of revise. I'd look back at these old things that I learned many years ago and see, you know, what I've forgotten and what I need to remind it of, and maybe things that I'd missed the first time around. And I can read this out in my garden. So that is why I have brought this textbook in. It is my backup, I suppose, to pick a topic where I don't have to sit on a computer. And yeah, this is a 1,462-page textbook. So it is a big one. It's got like those super, super thin pages. And usually I use it just as a weight when we want to flatten things. But I'm going to open it up today and I'm going to read a little bit to you. And I'm sure, like I said, this is an older textbook. It's probably out of date, but the basic information in it is still correct. And science, I'm sure, has only sort of expanded upon what is in here. And it starts out, you know, about, I would say, probably a grade 11 or 12 biology level, biology chemistry, and moves on to university. So I thought I would start with chapter 1, Cells and Genomes, and the Universal Features of Cells on Earth, and just read a few parts that I've highlighted in here, just as maybe a reminder or maybe something new for you to learn. Yeah. So before I get into that, let's enjoy a song. I have one here from Ruby Waters, a new song titled Adult Swim. And so Ruby Waters is a Canadian singer-songwriter of Métis and Slovak heritage who grew up in Shelburne, Ontario. Her parents were actually in a country band and introduced her to music at an early age. That sounds wonderful. And apparently she began busking and performing in bars around the age of 13. Interesting. Sounds a little young to be in bars, but she's obviously honed her musical skills. And so she first attracted attention when a video of her performing her debut single, Sweet Sublime, became popular on Reddit. She followed up with the singles Supernatural and Last Cigarette and toured as an opening act for City and Color on his 2019 tour before releasing her debut EP, Almost Naked. Her second EP, If It Comes Down to It, was released in 2020. And she released her single Blow in 2021 and was named the 29th best Canadian song of the year in CBC's Music Year-End Charts in 2021. And she received a Juno Award nomination for Alternative Album of the Year at the 2022 Juno Awards for It Comes Down to It. So this is a new song, Adult Swim. Enjoy.
Come over for a swim inside me. Just want you to tell me what to do. You know I've been up and down lately.
Maybe cover those sensitive ears. You're listening to CICK 93.9 FM, Smithers Community Radio. This is Laura from Nerding Out with Laura. Today I am reading from my old textbook, Molecular Biology of the Cell. I'm excited to dive into that. But first, I have important news. You're going to want to listen up. It is time to renew your CICK membership. It is an awesome thing for you to do. You're supporting these shows. These are volunteer-run shows. I'm not being paid for this, but there are things to pay for. We have to pay for this train station, or the old train that is our radio station, and lots of other awesome community things that we do, CICK news and all of that. So help support this station, this radio, and get your membership. You can go to smithersradio.com. I don't see the prices. I know it's not very expensive. I think it's like maybe like $25 for one person, but don't quote me on that. And then there's family memberships. We'll be talking about that quite a bit coming up. But do not delay, because there is something really cool they're doing this year. So CICK is partnering with Leroy from Ranch House Tattoo for a special flash tattoo sale. And renewed or new CICK members can book an appointment with Leroy and choose from the flash designs before they are released to the public. So if you don't know, flash tattoo sales are where the artist comes up with a sort of set of designs and you pick from there, and it's usually cheaper than getting one designed custom. And so the price range will be between $100 and $400 for the tattoo. There will be 4 repeatable designs and 6 non-repeatable designs. They can be color or no color, on legs and arms only, and the size is up to the artist. And these designs are going to be shared with the general public on May 15th. So you have 5 days to renew your membership and get to pick out one of those designs before anyone else can snatch them up. So a little bit about Leroy is an artist, owner of Ranch House Tattoo, a former carpenter. He moved from Berlin to Smithers in 2020 and has a passion for old school traditional and black work styles of tattooing. And yeah, that's a safe space for everyone. And so the CICK membership funds all go to CICK. And we are a nonprofit volunteer programmed radio station. And then you get to pick one of the designs early if you wish to participate in this flash tattoo sale. So that's sort of like an extra bonus. But then you have to pay for the tattoo on separately from that. So it's just sort of like a little bonus for joining CICK. We're also going to be working on some fun little merch giveaways to go in a little package with that membership card. I'm going to be doing some crafting today later with some wonderful CICK people. So renew your membership, please. All right, let's dig in. So I am starting with chapter 1 of Molecular Biology of the Cell, 4th edition, and we are going to talk about the universal features of cells on Earth. And some parts of this book are actually quite poetic. I like it. So just in the intro here, we have living things, though infinitely varied when viewed from the outside, are fundamentally similar inside. The whole of biology is a counterpoint between the two themes, astonishing variety in individual particulars and astonishing constancy in fundamental mechanisms. So even though we have all these different forms of life on Earth, you know, the plants, the animals, the difference between all the animals, the insects, the microorganisms, they're all so very different, but the fundamental mechanisms that power these organisms are very, very similar. So I'm going to go a little bit into that. So most living organisms on Earth are actually single cells. That is the entirety of them, just this one cell. So if you think of When you look under, say if you've ever looked at pond water under a microscope as a kid, and you'll see like your amoebas or little creatures that are just your little single cells. So they actually make up the bulk of life on Earth, the things that are invisible to our naked eye. But others, such as ourselves, are vast multicellular cities in which groups of cells perform specialized functions, so they all do a unique, different job, and are linked by intricate systems of communication. In all cases, whether we discuss the solitary bacterium or the aggregate of more than, say, 10 to the 13th power of cells that form a human body. So that's 10 plus 13 zeros. I'm not going to try and say what that number is. I don't know. But that many cells, on average, will form a human body. The whole organism has been generated by cell divisions from a single cell. We all start as a single cell. The single cell, therefore, is the vehicle for the hereditary, the information that is passed down through the generations that define the species. And specified by this information, the cell includes the machinery to gather raw materials from the environment and to construct out of them a new cell in its own image, complete with a new copy of the hereditary information. Nothing less than a cell has this capability. So even from a tiny bacteria that is a single cell that replicates itself, that is the basic unit of life. We come from a single cell, and from that replicating itself, we form the human body. So basically, the definition of a cell is something that can survive as its own unit and copy itself. So we are made of many different types of cells. Things like bacteria are made of one cell, and they need to be able to replicate themselves. So that's why there's quite a bit of discussion back and forth about viruses. So viruses are not considered living creatures, really, because they cannot replicate themselves. They must use a host cell. So they infect cells to replicate themselves. So that is why they aren't considered really a living organism. So the cell is the basic unit of life. And all cells store their hereditary information in the same linear chemical code. So for most of us, it's actually, yes, for all of us, it is DNA. There I am confusing viruses again. Sometimes viruses don't have DNA, but all cells have DNA. So all living cells on Earth, without any known exception, store their hereditary information in the form of double-stranded molecules of DNA. That is deoxyribonucleic acid. This is a long, unbranched polymer chain that is formed always of the same four types of building blocks or monomers. So a polymer is built of many things together, and the monomer is one of those pieces. So if you think of a Lego block as a monomer, if you stack those up together, you have formed a polymer. The codes for these four types of monomers in DNA are A, T, C, and G. And that stands for adenine, guanine, cytosine, or thymine. Each of these monomers is called a nucleotide, and they consist of two parts. There is a sugar, the deoxyribose. Anything that ends in ose is a sugar usually, so glucose, sucrose, fructose, lactose. So the sugar is deoxyribose, and it has a phosphate group attached to it. And so those phosphates and sugars form sort of the spine of the DNA, and they bond really tightly. Then attached to them, kind of hanging off of the side, are these bases. So the adenine, guanine, cytosine, and thymine. And these are linked together in this repetitive backbone. When we talk about a cell replicating itself passing on that hereditary information, what happens is that it's always exactly the same. We don't want any mistakes. A mistake can cause terrible things to happen. Like the cell, hopefully, if a mistake is made in the replication of DNA to form a new cell, the cell will just die. We don't want a cell with incorrect DNA to survive, because then it might replicate and pass that on. So that is how cancers are formed, by damage to our DNA that then causes problems in the body. To form this new DNA, we need to do an exact replicate. So what happens is these strands of DNA, you know, we have one phosphate sugar backbone, it's got these bases attached, and then the bases link to their corresponding bases on the other strand of DNA. So DNA is always two strands linked together in the middle by these bases. So A binds to T, adenine binds to thymine, and cytosine binds to guanine. So I'm sure you've seen the double-stranded helix structure of DNA in many, many, many TV shows. And so the template for the new DNA, what happens is the parent will split apart in the middle. So that sugar phosphate backbone is strong. It stays together on each of the strands. The two strands separate in the middle where the bases are attaching to each other to their complementary pair. The parent strand will separate, and then there are parts of the cell machinery that will then add the new bases onto each parent strand to form two new strands with two, how do we put this? So yes, there's the double-stranded DNA, the parent has two strands, they separate, and it forms into two double-stranded DNAs. So we have four strands in the end, two to four. And because those bases always bind to each other in that way, A to T and C to G, the new strand will have exactly the same order. So there's no mistakes made. I hope that makes sense. The base pairing holds fresh monomers in place and thereby controls the selection of which of the four monomers shall be added to the growing strand next. In this way, a double-stranded structure is created, consisting of two exactly complementary sequences of A's, C's, T's, and G's. They twist around each other, forming that double helix. So the bonds between the base pairs are weak compared to the sugar phosphate links, and this allows the two DNA strands to be pulled apart without breakage of their backbones, and each strand then serves as a template. Now, that is how the cell divides. It copies the DNA to pass it on to the new cell, but the DNA is more than just something that sits in the cell and is replicated when the cell replicates. It actually encodes for everything the cell does. So how does it do that? I think I will play a little song first before we get into that, because this is molecular biology. It can be quite dense. I am only 2 pages into my textbook of 1,462 pages. We won't read it all today, that's for sure. So we're going to listen to some metal. I have the song Green and Glass by Unleash the Archers. So think about our lovely double-stranded DNAs and how they are replicating themselves while you listen to this lovely music. You're listening to CICK 93.9 FM, Smithers Community Radio. This is Nerding Out with Laura, and you just heard the song Green and Glass by Unleash the Archers. That was really cool. I liked that song. So Unleash the Archers were formed in 2007 by frontwoman Brittany Slays. Excellent metal name. Together with her partner and the band's drummer, Scott Buchanan, while attending the University of Victoria. After moving to Vancouver in 2010, the band underwent several lineup changes, but were finally able to cement their unique genre-blending style of heavy metal with the addition of Grant Truesdell in 2011 and Andrew Kingsley in 2013. By weaving the aggression of the more extreme genres into the intricacies of traditional heavy metal, UTA, I guess Unleash the Archers, they abbreviate themselves, have created a sound unlike anything else in the industry. So I'm a real sucker for metal with like sort of that, ooh, that female vocalist sound. But I heard a little bit sort of like some growling in there too. So quite good. Very good stuff. Yeah, so we are talking about molecular biology of the cell. Just gave you a little brain break there after talking about DNA replication. I thought I had this like down. I thought I would explain this really well, but I'm looking at pictures and it's like so easy to understand something when you're looking at a picture, but it's a heck of a lot harder to explain it. Makes me wonder why so much of school is someone just talking at others, because it's really challenging. But now I am going to take on that challenge and I'm going to talk about So we are covering the section of this textbook that is talking about the universal features of cells on Earth. So all cells have DNA. All cells are able to exactly replicate that DNA when they form new cells of copies of themselves. And that DNA has to be exact, and they do that through the chemistry of the base pairs. So they have the strong sugar phosphate backbone, the more weakly binding base pairs. They split the two strands, they form new strands onto those templates, and then you have two double-stranded DNAs. But that DNA does more than replicate itself. So all cells will transcribe or copy portions of their hereditary information into the same intermediary form called RNA. So DNA is deoxyribonucleic acid. RNA is sort of a shorter single-strand copy, just very much like DNA, but it uses a different sugar, ribonucleic acid, so it's called RNA. So, to express the information on it, the DNA So the DNA, we've got the double strand. Once again, just like with replication, they are going to split those two strands apart. So now we have one strand out that's got its base pairs kind of hanging off into space, and that is going to form a template for the RNA. So this is a process called transcription, and just segments of the DNA are going to be copied over, not the entirety of the strand. And so these shorter molecules of RNA have a slightly different backbone. So they have the ribose instead of deoxyribose, but very similar strong backbone. It has another difference. Instead of thymine, it uses uracil as one of its bases. So it has A, C, and G, just like DNA. But now instead of T, we have a U. Not that important, just a little note here. So the A, U, C, and G of RNA will line up with the complementary TAGNC of DNA. So during transcription, the RNA monomers, the little Lego blocks, are lined up and selected for polymerization, forming the Lego block stack, on a template strand of DNA in the same way that DNA monomers are selected during their replication. So the outcome is therefore a polymer molecule. That sequence of nucleotides faithfully represents a part of the cell's genetic information, even though written in a slightly different alphabet. So we're using a C instead of T. And so the same segment of DNA can be used repeatedly to guide the synthesis of many identical RNA transcripts. So there's not just one copy, it will make a whole bunch of copies. And that is how some control happens in the cell, because obviously each cell has the same genetic information, but cells can be very different. There's maybe a brain cell or a muscle cell or a blood cell. They are expressing that genetic information different ways. And so one of those ways is how much and what parts of that DNA are copied into RNA. Okay. Thus, whereas the cell's archive of genetic information in the form of DNA is fixed and sacrosanct, the RNA transcripts are mass-produced and disposable. As we shall see, the primary role of many of these transcripts is to serve as intermediates in the transfer of genetic information. They serve as messenger RNA. mRNA, we call it, to guide the synthesis of proteins according to the genetic instructions stored in the DNA. There are other functions for RNA, but that's getting much more complicated. So let's just focus on the main function of most RNAs, which is messenger RNA, which is the intermediate between our DNA and our proteins. So proteins are what do all the work in the cell. Most of the work. I don't want to ever say all in biology, but we're not gonna dive into those complexities. And all cells use proteins as catalysts. So you may have heard of enzymes. That is a type of catalyst, something that helps a chemical reaction along. So protein molecules, like DNA and RNA molecules, are long unbranched polymer chains. Once again, if you think of our monomers as little Lego blocks and you stack those up together into forming a big stack, then that is our polymer. So a protein is much the same. And like RNA and DNA, they carry information in the form of a linear sequence of symbols, the same way as a human message written in an alphabetic script. There are many different protein molecules in each cell, and if we leave out the water, they form most of the cell's mass. So the monomers of protein, the Lego building blocks, are called amino acids, and this is where we get quite different from DNA and RNA. So instead of four bases differentiating the monomers of our genetic information, for proteins, there are 20 types of amino acids. And this you might now recognize in forms of different, like, dietary or nutritional informations. But each amino acid is built around the same core structure through which it can be linked to any other amino acid in the set. So attached to this core, though, so if we think of a core as like the backbone, there is a side group that gives each amino acid a distinctive chemical character. So each of the protein molecules or polypeptides created by joining amino acids in a particular sequence folds into a precise three-dimensional form. So it is the form, the structure, that these proteins form after they are made that determines how they act. What is their function? So these forms will bind to other things in the environment with high specificity. Maybe it's other proteins. Maybe it's things like, if you think about our red blood cells, have hemoglobin that is a protein that binds to oxygen. So that is its specific shape that is doing a specific function, binding to an oxygen molecule. There are many functions of proteins. They can act as enzymes to catalyze reactions, sort of help them along, or direct many other chemical processes, maintain structures, think of like muscle cells, generate movement, send signals, just all the work of the body, of the cell, is done by these proteins. Once again, I used all, I should say most. Let's take a step back. Our end goal are these proteins. We've started with our DNA, we've made our RNA, which is our intermediate, our messenger, and this RNA needs to be translated. So first we have transcription of the RNA, then we have translation of the RNA into proteins. This is where we start getting a little more complicated. Our genetic information is four letters, four different bases, and these need to code for 20 different types of amino acids. How do we do such a thing? The information in the sequence of a messenger RNA molecule is read out in groups of three at a time, so three nucleotides at a time. Each triplet, or codon as we call it, specifies or codes for a single amino acid in a corresponding protein. Since there are actually 64 possible codons, so if we take 4 times 4 times 4, so each RNA can only have four different bases, and we are doing triplicates, so we would times 4 by 4 by 4 would be 64 possible different ways of organizing that triplicate. But we only have 20 amino acids. So there are many cases in which several different codons correspond to the same amino acid. So we have kind of an overabundance of codons, and they know. The cells know, I'll tell you how they know, that they code for only 20 different amino acids. And so this code is read out by a special class of small RNA molecules, the transfer RNAs. Each type of tRNA becomes attached at one end to a specific amino acid and displays at its other end a specific sequence of three nucleotides, an anticodon. So if you think of our chain of RNA, it's got four different bases in a bunch of whatever pattern was coded for in the DNA. And then those are read at three at a time by these cute little tRNAs. So if you think of them, they look kind of like a little upside down T. They've drawn them here. I don't know if that's actually their shape. But on one side of them, they attach to a specific amino acid. And on the other side, they have different triplicates of bases that bond to the RNA. So say we have ACC is the codon, the anticodon. It binds to UGG on the mRNA. And because that is a very specific base pairing, whatever amino acid is attached to the other side is then linked to the chain. It's pretty cool. It looks a lot better in a photo. So for this synthesis of protein, a succession of tRNA molecules charged with their appropriate amino acids have to be brought together with their mRNA molecule and matched up by base pairing through their anticodons with each of its successive codons. The amino acids then have to be linked together to extend the growing protein chain. And the tRNAs, relieved of their burdens, have to be released. This whole complex of processes is carried out by a giant multi-molecular machine, the ribosome, which is formed of two main chains of RNA and more than 50 different proteins. So there's like this factory, basically, that attaches to the mRNA, and it sort of reads it through the chain, and then it pulls in these little tRNAs, each of them linked with one amino acid, and those link to the appropriate spots on the mRNA, and then the ribosome attaches the amino acids to each other. this evolutionarily ancient molecular juggernaut latches onto the end of an mRNA molecule and then trundles along it. I love the language of this. Capturing loaded tRNA molecules and stitching together the amino acids they carry to form a new protein chain. We've just gone through a little description of how that DNA is translated into RNA and then the RNA translated into a protein. And so DNA molecules are very large. They can contain the specifications for thousands of proteins. And therefore, we can't transcribe all of them all at once. Then all the cells would be overloaded with these proteins that they wouldn't need. So a gene is what we will define as the segment of the DNA sequence that corresponds to a single protein. So the DNA contains many different genes. I'm sure you've heard of genes. So if you think of those as just a portion of the DNA, and each gene encodes for a specific protein. So when the cell knows that it needs a type of protein, it opens up that part of the DNA. The mRNA is transcribed. The mRNA goes over to the ribosome. The ribosome grabs those tRNAs, those transfer RNAs, to translate that into a protein. And in all cells, the expression of these individual genes is regulated. So instead of manufacturing its full repertoire of possible proteins at full tilt all the time, the cell adjusts the rate of transcription and translation of different genes independently according to need. So we have these stretches of regulatory DNA. So these aren't genes. They're just for regulating the genes. So these are non-coding regions, and they bind to special protein molecules that control the rate of transcription, so how much RNA is coming off of that DNA. In this way, the genome of the cell, that is the total of its genetic information as embodied in its complete DNA sequence, dictates not only the nature of the cell's proteins, but also when and where they are to be made. So that's very important. Like I mentioned before, with cancer cells, there's some sort of error, usually in regulatory sections of DNA. Maybe a protein for dividing the cell as a signal is overexpressed and you get a tumor because that cell keeps dividing and dividing and dividing because its regulatory DNA is damaged. It's been encoded wrong. So it's very, 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 very important. And all cells have these same processes. Doesn't matter if you're a bacteria, if you're a human, if you're a worm, an insect, a fish, all of these cells have this process that I have just explained. And I'm just going to go into one last little bit about energy. So life requires free energy. For the cell to make a new cell in its own image, it must take in free energy from the environment as well as raw materials to drive those necessary reactions. To create a new DNA molecule with the same sequence as an existing DNA, those monomers must be lined up in the correct sequence on the DNA strand that is used as a template. At each point in the sequence, the selection of that appropriate nucleotide depends on the fact that the correctly matched one binds to the template more strongly than mismatched nucleotides. The greater the difference in binding energy, the rarer are the occasions in which a mismatched nucleotide is accidentally inserted in the sequence instead of the correct one. So things can bind to each other if they aren't good matches, but it's really hard to do. They sort of want, the way the chemical structures are, they want to bind to the correct ones. That's why we've evolved this way. So the energy required to make a mismatch is way, 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 way greater than the energy required to make a proper match. And so energy factors in on how well those cells replicate. So the cell therefore requires free energy, which has to be imported somehow from its surroundings to replicate its genetic information faithfully. The same principle applies to the synthesis of most of the molecules in cells. A fresh input of free energy is required to force those matched nucleotides apart again. So that's what I'm talking about. They've released energy by bonding together in the correct way, but when we replicate, we need an influx of energy to force that DNA apart to start replicating it. So that's just something, a little something to think about. We're coming up to the end of our hour. I've only made it to page 10. And there's so much more fascinating stuff in here. I hope that if this is something you've learned before, I hope it's jogged your memory. And if it's something brand new, I hope you enjoyed learning about it. And so enjoy your Friday. It's is May 10th today, and I am going to, remind you to renew your membership. I'm going to thank a sponsor. Thank you to Babine Animal Hospital, a great place to bring your pet if you need a bit of care. They are located on Railway, and I bring my two cats there. They're very wonderful. So thank you to Babine Animal Hospital for supporting Community Radio. I'm going to end off in one last song. We have Kelly McMichael with the song You Got It Wrong. And so Kelly McMichael is a Canadian singer-songwriter from Peterborough, Ontario, currently based in St. John's, Newfoundland and Labrador. And she released a full-length album, Waves, in 2021 and was shortlisted for the 2022 Polaris Music Prize. So that's pretty cool. I hope you enjoy this new song.